It's time for Talk Back. Talk Back is your opportunity to communicate with us. Maybe you've got a letter you'd like to write, and we would love to hear from you. The address is 260 Northeast 2nd Street, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, 55744. You can send us an email to comments@kaxe.org, and you can send emails to me personally at jlatimer, J-L-A-T-I-M-E-R, @kaxe.org. You can also call our talkback number. That number is 218-999-9876.
You know, you have a cheerful voice, but I can, when I come in here and you haven't gotten a letter in the mail that's handwritten, I can see you're always kind of...
It just...
So, you know, you could just send John a postcard just saying, hey, John.
Yeah.
Here's some mail for you.
That would be nice.
Right, have a pretty
maybe
picture
draw
on
a picture on it, yeah. Okay. Or send one with a picture on the other side. Those are nice to get to. Yeah, so get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. We have heard from a couple of you. I got a nice note from good friend Jeff Sipper. Jeff is a retired fifth grade teacher from the Crosby area. He lives in Brainerd now. He said that last week on Tuesday there were hundreds of Nighthawks migrating through the Brainerd area. So perhaps you were lucky enough to see them. You are getting to the end of the Nighthawk migration. My friend Sam Miltich also mentioned that he had Nighthawks passing over his fields this past week. So the Nighthawk migration is on. It's an amazing migration, and those birds will be on the wing for a long time. They go all the way down to South America to spend the winter. So Nighthawks, if you haven't seen them yet, it's getting kind of late. You're going to catch the laggers, but the big group has probably moved through.
I was thinking of Nighthawks yesterday on my bike ride.
Yeah?
Because a bug flew right in my mouth. A big one. That's how they eat, right?
Yeah, that's how they eat, man. They do have they've got a wide mouth, and they've got these hairs that are modified feathers that actually stick out beyond the outsides of their mouths to help deflect the missed ones in. And I can remember being out in the middle of a field riding my bicycle. The Nighthawks came in. I got off my bike and just leaned against it and sat on the bar and watched the Nighthawks fly around me for maybe 40 minutes. They came within feet of me. You could hear the wind in their wings, and they were just feeding all through that field, and they stayed until they kind of cleaned out the insects, and then they moved on.
So all those flies around you.
Oh, yeah, you know me.
Nighthawks trying to give you a clue there.
That's
maybe
right.
You ought to take a shower.
Guy's a good decoy, but, man, plug your nose when you go in. Yeah, so the Nighthawks are on the move. Nice note from Peter Hovde, who said that he had a hummingbird at his house. I've had a number of hummingbirds this week. They're down significantly from a week ago. When I talked last, there were like five or six buzzing around a two-hole feeder. And I have three of these feeders out, and they were, you know, so there had to be close to maybe 10 or 15 hummingbirds in the yard. That's not the case anymore. I might have three or four, all females. The males have gone. I haven't seen a male since a week ago Sunday, so it's that kind of a deal. So, Peter, thanks for the note on the hummingbirds. We got a note from Lisa Hess up in by Wabik area, and she said that she had seen a monarch. I've seen a couple of monarchs there. This is the generation that will be on migration, so watch if we get these south winds we're going to have the next couple of days will probably keep the monarchs kind of in the area. Once it starts to blow from the north, I wouldn't be surprised, but what we see, lots of monarchs heading south. And my friend Dallas Hudson over in Akeley says that when you see them flying across a lake, they're on migration because they normally would flit their way around the edge of the lake and eat. And these guys are in a hurry to get south. So watch for watch for north winds and south flying monarchs over the next few weeks. Finally, Rich Libby sent me a piece from the Duluth News Tribune, and they're talking with Bill Berg. And Scott, you remember Bill? Bill used to come in with us on Tuesday mornings and talk way back when we had the office over at the college.
35 years ago,
yeah,
maybe.
Something like that.
Bill was a wildlife biologist with DNR for many, many years.
Yep.
Good storyteller. Could tell you about the lives of all kinds of wildlife.
Oh, man. He was a great radio personality. Moved to Knife River.
Yeah. You know, he'd go for a swim every day in Spider Lake, right?
Yep.
And now he jumps in the... Every morning he jumps in
Lake Superior. And he does it into October.
I know.
The guy is crazy. Bill Berg, a retired DNR wildlife biologist who spent much of his career in Grand Rapids area, said the 1976 drought, the worst in northern Minnesota that anyone alive can remember, hit hard in the fall with such dry conditions that and so many wildfires that the DNR postponed the firearms deer season until Thanksgiving week to keep hunters from accidentally starting fires. Berg was part of a team that, when they weren't out flying wildfires, surveying the impacts of drought on beavers, flying over beaver dams that had entirely dried up. The DNR canceled the 1976-77 beaver trapping season for fear that the population might be in danger due to the utter lack of beaver ponds. But Berg said nature has a way of coping, and that as much of a crisis as it might be for the beaver to lose its pond and its lodge, they somehow persevered. So did most other critters. We'd see other otter tracks and beaver tracks going for miles out of those dry ponds. It's amazing how far they would go to find some water they could use, Berg said. I'm sure the predators had a feast, the wolves and coyotes getting those beavers out of the water where they were vulnerable. But, you know, we did surveys the next year, and the beaver population really hadn't changed much at all because of the drought. Those beavers managed to find water somewhere. It's pretty neat how nature adapts. That final line, it's pretty neat. That's Bill Berg. Absolutely.
Kind of an understatement, but in awe of it all, isn't he?
He is,
yeah. Nature is probably more resilient than we are.
I would suspect, yeah. It comes right down to it. They'll survive.
Our plants and critters, they kind of know how to deal with a lot of the ups and downs. Hey, I asked you about my cedar waxwings.
Yeah.
They came in, swooped in, and scarfed up all my mountain ash berries within 6 hours probably. And what I want to know, you mentioned the nighthawks. Are they getting ready to migrate, the waxwings?
Oh, the waxwings will probably hang around as long as they're fruit.
Okay.
The cedar waxwings tend to be a little bit south of here in the winter, although they'll be here perhaps.
Really?
Yeah, the Bohemian waxwing is the one that we get a lot more of in the wintertime. And you'll see flocks of them flying around town, picking up all these old dried apple trees and grabbing the fruit that's available.
I can always tell the Bohemians from the cedars because the Bohemians have a cigarette hanging outside
that's
of their
mouth. That's the ones. Those are the ones. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we've had quite a morning of discussion already about phenology, and we're going to go back and cover a couple of those points. One that I wanted to make sure that we registered and that stayed with us was we were just talking about mountain lions and rabbits, and deer are a big part of the diet of mountain lions, wherever they are. And the deer here in northern Minnesota are undergoing some changes. Now is the time when they will shed their red hair of summer and gather that brown-gray hair of winter. And that is already happening. It happens first among the bucks, and then the does. I saw a doe this past week that was sort of semi-colored. I mean, she wasn't that bright red of summer anymore, but she wasn't the full gray of winter yet either. So she's in the process of moving from red to gray. And I saw a fawn this week that had just a ghost of spots. You could still see some of the little white hair spots, but that fawn is also changing, and that as it morphs into its winter coat, it will change quite a bit as well. And interestingly, though, not this month, but in the next coming months, as the deer's diet changes from grasses and forbs and the sort of things that they enjoy this time of year to a more woody browse, the does will rub noses with their fawns, and in doing so, they will pass the biology necessary to digest the woody materials to the fawns, so that when they start eating this woody stuff through the winter, they'll have the right biology going in their rumen so that they can dissolve and digest the woody material and get from it much of what they can. The other thing that's going to change with deer is during the summer, when they're eating this rich diet of green plants and forbs and whatnot, their excrement tends to clump. And oftentimes you'll see these big clumps of scat. Yeah. And now as they switch and go into fall and their diet changes, this is going to happen probably in late September, October, November. The poo is going to change from these clumps to the individual pellets that you're probably familiar with when you think of deer scat. So lots of things going on with deer, and many of them are worthy of note, and I hope that you will check them out. The other notes that I have regarding wild animals, had a coyote on my trail cam this past week and a black bear. The bears are really hungry, and they're, because the failure of the fruit crops, they're going everywhere and anywhere for food. And I mentioned this last week, I'll mention it again this week. Be careful. Don't leave out things that will attract bears to your property. If you leave out your bird feeder, you got to expect a bear is going to come and tear it down and eat the seeds. If you're throwing away compost in your garbage, you got to expect that the bear is going to tear open your garbage can and eat that compost. If you don't want those interactions with bears, you need to take precautions so that the food isn't available for them. They're not coming because they like you, and they're not coming because they think you've got a cool house. They're coming because there's food there. And if you get rid of the food, put it away, put it in metal cans inside your garage, whatever you need to do, the bears will not harass you. They won't come to your yard. So be careful. It's up to you to, you know, get along with the bears. And they are going to be hungry this fall, and they're going to be looking for every morsel of food that they can find. Oftentimes they'll be up in a tree. If you've got apples, if you were lucky enough to have a tree that actually grew apples, picture on Facebook Season Watch page this morning of an apple tree that was torn over by a bear. Not much you can do about those. I suppose you could go out and harvest the apples. So just be prepared. And if you have white oaks, you probably have bears around just eating the acorns out of the white oaks. Know that they will consume all of the acorns that they can find, and then they'll move on. So it's kind of up to you how much interaction you want to have with bears. The good news and bad news, I guess, there's a little of both in this next section. The yellow jackets are out in force. Holy mackerel. I tend to just sort of swing at them gently with my arm, the way a horse might swing its tail to brush flies off. I don't want to hurt them. I just don't want them to feel comfortable around me. So I swing at them. And usually if I swing at them a little bit, you know, exuberantly for a few seconds, they just generally go away. They're like, well, you know what? Whatever he's got to offer, it's not worth those damn hands that keep flying at me. So, and I don't get stung, but I don't go after them hard either. I'm just like sort of pushing them away when they get close to me. So you can do that for the yellow jackets. They are at the end of their life cycle. They mostly, what you're dealing with are females that have sort of done the work that they needed to do all summer and now are just taking it easy. And so they're just out looking for protein and sweet. and beer is sweet to a hornet. and they keep trying to drink my beer, in which case, you know, I'm kind of going to pull them out, shake them off, squeeze the beer back out of them so that they don't take any, and then flip them away. So, yeah, the good news, that's the bad news. The good news is that the deer flies are practically non-existent. If you're a biker or if you walk in the woods, you probably have noticed that over the last couple of weeks, the deer flies have just sort of disappeared. And man, that's never bad news. Always happy to hear that the deer flies are gone. Among the birds this past week, of course, we mentioned nighthawk migration. I hope you got a chance to see that. There may be a few sneaking out of the area in the next few days, so keep your eyes open for nighthawks. Scott Hall reported cedar waxwings eating the mountain ash berries off of his mountain ash. I have American kestrels out on the field by my house. I can hear the trumpeter swans from the lake. They're calling in the mornings. I was driving out Blue Heron Drive the other day, and there were a pair of sandhill cranes right alongside the road. Gave me a chance to get a good look at them. They are mine, that is, the two that I saw, were starting to become more naturally gray. In the summertime, where they can find it, they find this iron coming up out of the ground, and because it comes up in the water, and then when it meets oxygen, it rusts and you get this red mud. They take that red mud and they stain their feathers with it so that they look pretty red in the summertime. These were on their way back toward a more natural gray, which is their normal color. So check out the sandhill cranes. They're doing a pretty good job in the area. Among the plants and some of the notes that I had about them, asparagus are starting to put out fruit, and the fruit are starting to ripen, so you'll see these little red berries starting to form on the asparagus. Mountain ash are in full fruit. Sawtooth sunflowers are probably the predominant wild sunflower that's blooming around my house. The flower boneset, that white kind of fuzzy-looking flower, flat cluster of tight flowers at the top of a stem where the leaves join at the base, so the name boneset, is down to its last flowers. Flat-topped goldenrod is done flowering. Gray goldenrod is flowering quite well right now. Among the asters, I had flat-topped aster, heart-leafed aster, panicled aster, and Eastern lined, I think they call it, lanceolatus, is so there are at least, large leafed aster. All of those asters are still in flower. If you see a blue or white flower that's fairly small but has lots of rays around the edge, maybe more than 10, maybe up to 30, you're looking at asters, and then it's just a matter of checking out how the leaf attaches to the stem, whether the stem is hairy or smooth, and a few other things that will sort those asters out for you. Flat-topped goldenrod is down to its last flowers. Gray goldenrod is doing really well. Gray goldenrod is that one with the compact flower that looks kind of like a finger, sort of tight flower cluster, longer than wide and quite tall and slightly bent. Looking over the speckled alder, the fruits from this last year, and a year ago we had almost no fruits. This year they are laden with fruits. These little, right now they look like tiny green pine cones, and as they ripen they will become dark brown, and sometime in the winter they'll start dropping their seeds onto the snow. But the other thing that's going on with the speckled alder, if you look at them, is that next year's male flowers, male catkins, are starting to distend. And they're up to about 2 centimeters, just 3/4 of an inch or so. Same thing is true of both the American and the beaked hazels. Both of them, the male flowers, are starting to emerge. Jack in the Pulpit berries are getting ripe. They're not all ripe yet, but lots of red berries among the Jack in the Pulpit. The red oak in my yard is still dropping acorns, and the deer and the bears and the squirrels are still ignoring them. With white oak bear acorns around, they'd much rather those. Big blue stem grass is in flower, and the rice, the wild rice on my lake, looks like it's ready to harvest. That's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, I encourage you to get in touch with us if you have an observation you'd like to share. We are waiting to hear from you.